Welcome to the Global Research News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman, back again, and in our new time slot, we began last week, an hour earlier. We're now on Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Central U.S. time, various other times around the country and the world, and we'll be on a bit flexible in our schedule. We'll be on live Monday and Tuesday. As of now, Wednesday through Friday will be archive repeats of the current week's programs, but we'll remain a little flexible and may occasionally add a special program depending on the availability of guests and the availability of the hosts as well. Time is a considerable factor with everything we're all involved in. But my guest today is someone who I have known for a period of time, mostly from her magnificent programming. Mariah Gallardin is my guest. And Mariah, some years back, I'll let you correct me, Mariah, if I'm wrong. I believe in 1993 you founded TUC Radio. Is that right?
Yes. You know, history is a little shady so far back. I started in 92 with a couple of specials on globalization to just see if anybody out there might be interested in it.
Oh,
and I mailed those from a ranch in Northern California while the sheepdog trials were going on in town. I was licking stamps and putting things into the mail. And it was the very first attempt to explain the new global system that then was still called the GATT and later became the WTO. So that was my first attempt. And I was actually surprised and amazed that radio stations called me back and said, we are interested. We are going to schedule this. And that then encouraged me to go weekly in 93.
You have an extraordinary program. Listeners need to know about what you do, Mariah, and you do it on a shoestring. You do it by yourself. You're really a lone ranger. You don't have any deep-pocketed funders. And what you do is really in the class of extraordinary. There's no question. You've been around radio for getting close to 30 years, I think going back to around 1980. And let me tell listeners what TUC stands for if they don't know about you. Number one, they can access information about TUC and current programs, I believe, on your website, tucradio.org. And TUC stands for Time of Useful Consciousness. It's an aeronautical term, and it describes the time a pilot has between the onset of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. In other words, the remaining time to save the plane. What better metaphor for conditions today in the country and the world? And they get worse, Mariah, not better, very sadly. And we need you in what you do more than ever. You're an inspiration for me in what I do.
I don't know what to say, Steve. I'm really, really honored that somebody like you, who is so really well-versed in national and international politics, that you would say such a thing. So thank you.
Oh, it's an understatement, I assure you. And that music means we have a break coming up, but you truly are an inspiration to me. There's no question. And we'll let you go into more about TUC and how you got going and the programs that you're putting together. Let's take a break and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. I'm on with Mariah Gallardin from TUC Radio. Mariah, I must say that I have such wonderful guests on, and they're all over the country, some of them around the world. And one of my greatest dismays is it's I'm not able to meet most of these people. It's very unusual for me to know my guests personally because we live in different parts of the country and the world. But I have the great pleasure and honor of meeting you. I really wanted to do it, and when I was lucky enough to make a trip to California, to the Bay Area, to have you make a special trip down so we could get to meet each other a little bit, and that was such a great joy for me.
For me as well.
Oh.
It was also a great event. It was a 9/11 event at the Grand.
Oh, it truly was. It was an amazing event, just an amazing event, really. I had to leave because I had to head up north, but it was a 9/11 event to get into some of the known truths about that terrible day that have been ruthlessly suppressed from the public so that we really don't know what went on. But it certainly wasn't the official story that the government told us and the media told us and so on. But
just briefly on that, I'm really heartened by the fact that so many of all walks of life are now demanding a new investigation, admitting that the old investigation, the 9/11 Commission, has not answered any of the real important questions. So I'm looking forward to that.
Well, we absolutely need it, and I call that commission the 9/11 Whitewash Commission. And it really was outrageous, but what could we expect, Mariah? I mean, there was no possibility they would get into anything controversial. And the things that we know about that day are enough to curl your hair. Just imagine what we don't know that we can only hope someday we'll find out. I don't know that the Obama team will make any greater an effort than the Bush team made. So it may be left for a future administration, if we ever get a decent one, to get into stuff like this.
Us. You know, that's since you referred to my long history in radio 30 years back, and it was really incredible to observe over that time the emergence of internet radio, of information via websites, of the reemergence of small radio stations that had been outlawed by the FCC and came back via micropower, low-power FM radio efforts, and efforts of people who I know who openly defied the law and just started broadcasting and got themselves, if not arrested, had their equipment confiscated, and then based a lawsuit, a First Amendment lawsuit, on the defense of what they were doing. So there are parts of radio history that show us that we have a formidable power here if we get to preserve it, to do our own investigations and have a conversation like you and I are having. I mean, I hadn't dreamed when I first went into national distribution that this would ever be possible. I had to buy time from the NPR satellite system, which is actually not really the NPR satellite system. Somehow, National Public Radio got hold of the satellite in the sky and administered it to its own benefit, giving itself deep discounts for the huge amounts of hours they're using the satellite every day, and having somebody small like me pay top dollars because I was only on for half an hour. That was my only avenue of distribution, and I did it. And so did David Barsamyan, who many of you probably know was alternative radio, and my dear friend Frieda Werden, who still produces Wings. So at one point when you praised me for being a solo radio producer, I have to credit David Barsamyan and Frieda Werden, who actually did this a little bit before I started and were my inspiration.
I honestly don't know Frieda, Mariah. I know of David Barsamyan and his alternative radio program, and he does the same kind of work that you do. And again, you know, dependent on whatever support you can get from listeners, because there are no deep-pocketed people around to fund the kind of work that people like you and David do. They don't want your information over the airwaves because you get into the most important topics with the most wonderful guests, and you provide the most important information that we all need. This is what a democracy is supposed to be all about, as we know, Mariah. But, of course, it's not that way at all. and the dominant media is so concentrated, and they keep the important truths from us.
Yeah, let me credit somebody who recently had the pleasure of presenting with important information, because what Michael Parenti is saying about capitalism and capitalism being in essence an apocalyptic system really really piqued people's interest. Even though the talk that had the most success, capitalism's apocalypse, why the rich can't save anyone, not even themselves, even though that talk was given just a few weeks, on August 23rd, just a few weeks before the terrible truth of the financial crisis finally became apparent. And, of course, people like Michael Parenti, who has such a sharp analysis of the function of the state, he and others have predicted this, of course, for a while, based on their analysis. And the part that really, really is memorable to anybody who heard that particular program is that he said the role of the state is twofold. One is the modern capitalist state. One is to help in the accumulation of capital, and that's certainly obvious, and the focusing of capital at the top has so accelerated in the last 15, 20 years that it's even more obscene. It's, you know, less than 0.5% own 90% of the wealth. The other part that he that brought a smile to everybody who heard this was that he said the second function of the capitalist state is to protect capitalism from the capitalists, because capitalism is so voracious that it looks around for more ways to amass money, that it even, mistakenly maybe, or in a greedy frenzy, eats its own tail. And that particular image comes back to me almost every day when I open the paper and realize who else is choking on his own tail in these circumstances.
But of course, the best connected, biggest corporations, Mariah, they're able to get a government's largesse courtesy of us, the taxpayers, and I think Parenti and others talk about socialism for the rich and free market capitalism for the rest of us.
Yes.
sink or swim. We are out there in the jungle, and if we make it, fine, and if we don't, we will not get a bailout, that's for sure.
And also, you know, the debt was already terribly worrisome to anybody looking. Now it's the measures to deal with financial crisis are increasing the debt, and that really spells terribly for the future, because another really interesting observation that Parenti was making in this particular talk was that a debt is actually a wonderful thing, because it tends to accumulate more money at the top, because so much tax money gets used to service these debts, and it leaves so much less the essential services. So if you are increasing the debt, you are yet again increasing the wealth of the top financiers and
absolutely.
Top corporations.
Absolutely. It's part of the government's engineering a massive wealth transfer, Mariah, from the great majority of the people, 90% or more, to the very top sliver of the population, let's just say the top 1%, but the big corporations, the very wealthy. This is a plot to take our money via our tax dollars and cuts.
Yeah, both the crisis and the solution to the crisis are part of the same plot, I would say.
Oh, indeed. By the way, the Parenti talk you're referring to, they can access it on your website. They could order a tape of this Parenti talk and
they
others that
actually,
you made.
Steve, they can actually click at it and download it for free right now.
Oh that would
and
be wonderful.
You can get that through my website, which is www.tucradio.org. That's Tiger Unicorn Cat followed by radio, one word, .org. And the news program section has this particular piece on it. And I need to apologize. I tried to update my website and take away some of the bookkeeping that's at the top of the news program page. But we don't have an internet connection due to snow here this morning.
I'll tell you
so
about
you need
our
to
weather.
Wade through the numbers, and I hear the music, and no, we are
we have
to
take
up.
A break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Mariah Gallardon of TUC Radio. Started to mention Mariah. It's a far colder day in Chicago than we usually get. Chicago weather usually isn't as bad as most people who don't live here think it is. We honestly don't get that much snow, at least not downtown where I live. But today is brutally cold. 6 degrees comes up on my computer screen. I suspect that's at the airport, and it's probably a little warmer downtown, maybe about 10 degrees, but it's mighty, mighty cold. I think it's going to get a little milder tomorrow, but I spoke to you yesterday, said it was going to be cold. It's a good day to stay in and have a radio program.
Well, I mentioned to you how I stay warm. I mean, when Steve came to California, I really wanted him to see my house, but we didn't get around to that. We just
had a wonderful afternoon
chatting in a coffee house in Oakland.
Oh, we did do that. Explain briefly to listeners what you've been able to do for yourself in your home. And we spoke yesterday about it, and I can only wish that everybody could do what you did. Just very briefly, it's off our subject, but very briefly tell listeners what you did.
Yeah, well, it's not totally off because we just talked about that my programs are still free. And among the original producers, I'm really the only one who is still keeping them free and asking people to please return the gift if they can. And it's working, sort of. It's working because I've greatly, greatly reduced my living expenses. And I finally left San Francisco as well, because it's just getting too expensive to live in the cities. And what I did over the last 8 years is build with my own hands a straw bale house that is my own personal carbon sink. And the straw bale house is covered with a clay mud coating, goes in and out, and it's extremely, the walls are 2 feet thick. It's extremely well insulated, and the area I moved into has cold winters. I'm looking at snow also right now, and quite hot summers. So I've been able to enjoy a quite moderated temperature to begin with. It doesn't get hot inside the house or very cold, and I have just one wood-burning stove that keeps it warm. And the house is off the grid. So I have my solar panels, and I can see the sheets of snow are slowly sliding off. If they're not off by the end of our program, I'm going to go out with a broom and sweep them off because I won't be collecting electric through the snow.
So the electric company will not profit at your expense, Mariah. I think that's wonderful.
No. And, you know, every now and then I do need to turn on a generator. But that's the energy use is in the gallons per year. It's no comparison. And the house is passive solar, so the sun heats it really well through a greenhouse, added greenhouse. So it's actually also visible on my website. If you go there on the news program page, there's a little note to my readers in October when I finally really had moved all my equipment here. And there's a very a sort of modest little link. If you click at the word photos that's highlighted in blue, you can see early photos of the construction and photos of the fire that almost consumed the house, and also more recent photos of what it looks like now.
I think what you did is remarkable. I'm all thumbs when it comes to doing things you're talking about now, but I think it's truly remarkable. It's not, of course, easy for an awful lot of people to do this, especially like me living in the city of Chicago. I don't think the authorities in the city would take kindly if I got myself a little plot someplace and I started to build myself a home like yours. I suspect that the police would be by very, very quickly to shut me down.
That's possible, yeah. Well, you're so much more under the grasp of the authorities. But, you know, I listen to the advertisements that come on in between our conversation, and I realize that a lot of people are interested in, you know, food security, for instance, and adverse to genetically modified foods. And that is something that happens around me here in Northern California as well. There was an initiative to ban genetically modified organisms from Mendocino County that won, in spite of huge amounts of money paid by Monsanto to prevent that from coming through. And the neighboring county, Lake County, is now also considering banning GMOs. And then last night, I was having dinner with one of our neighbors, and she just came from a meeting where they are struggling to prevent an area, an agricultural area just outside of the little town I am near, from being built upon, mainly really for the reason that there's 15 feet of wonderful topsoil that should not disappear under parking lots and houses.
Amen to that, Mariah. We're on the bottom of the hour.
I was shut up earlier this time because I could hear the music.
We're at the midway point. We need to take another break, and we'll be right back.
Okay.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Welcome back to the News Hour. I'm Steve Linden. I'm on with Mariah Gallardon of TUC Radio. Mariah, I forgot to mention at the top of the hour that the program is really because of the website and my co-host Michelle Chosudovsky, and the site that he edits, globalresearch.ca, that I always want listeners to be aware of just how important that site is and the material that goes on it every single day. And Michelle is a very distinguished world figure. He's my co-host. He's been world traveling. He's been teaching for several months, and he'll be back co-hosting with me early next year. I know he'll do it as soon as he's able. And again, we're on 5 days a week now, so we can very possibly expand the live programming, get maybe more guests on, depending on our time availability. There's so much to do, Mariah, and so few of us. And you talk about topics. You cover such a breadth of important topics on your program. I try to do it on this one as well. GMO foods is one. That's been a topic on this program twice that I'm aware of. Once I was the host, and once Michelle was the host with Bill Engdahl, and he wrote a very, very important book called Seeds of Destruction. Information on it is on Global Research. And he talked about how the big agribusiness giants literally want to make all food GMO. And this stuff is proved to be absolutely harmful to human health. This stuff will kill us if we don't get rid of it. But the Monsantos of the world literally want to poison the planet with these foods.
Yes, it's the agenda behind it being that they want to gain possession of the source of survival. Because if you are making seeds that need chemicals to become valid, you control the chemicals. If you make foods like the Roundup Ready corn that Monsanto produces, if you make foods that encourage you to use more chemicals, you'll really have a double stranglehold on people if then you are the maker of Roundup as well, which Monsanto is.
Well, not only the chemical, Mariah, but the seeds. And the seeds are not reusable, so the farmers that they entrap into using their seeds, they have to buy new seeds every year, and then the chemicals, and they literally pollute the land once they plant this stuff in it. It's a hideous situation, absolutely hideous.
Yes.
And only one of so many topics, Mariah. I wanted to mention also, I mean, we could spend all day talking about all the major issues. There are so many and so little time to discuss them at any one point in time. But one of your tapes that I have is on the corruption of democracy and the work that the amazing Australian writer, now deceased, Alex Gary did. And I read his book some years back, a truly remarkable book, Taking the Risk Out of Democracy. Can I read his tagline to listeners? It's so brief. I just pull
sure.
it up on my screen. Oh, it's a wonderful tagline. And Noam Chomsky and Edward Herman wrote probably the best media critique book called Manufacturing Consent, written 20 years ago, but it's been updated a number of times. I think fairly recent. Well, reasonably recently in its latest edition. And that's another book that's must reading. But they dedicated the book to Alex Gary because of the work that he did. And Taking the Risk Out of Democracy, and his tagline was that the 20th century has been characterized by three developments of great political importance: the growth of democracy, the growth of corporate power, and the growth of corporate propaganda against democracy. And, of course, that's through the media and the PR apparatus and so on.
Yes.
So they say we have it, but they keep it from us.
And that's, you know, a point, too, that Parenti was making, that a corporate system is totally anti-democratic in every way, of course. It begins for the worker who walks into a factory and loses practically all her or his rights when they begin to work in there, up to, of course, that nobody can really control what corporations do. If they want to blow up the mountains in West Virginia and Kentucky and shove the overburden into the wonderful streams there to get the coal, they're being supported in these endeavors by the government, not being regulated, although they're violating all kinds of provisions of clean air and water, even as weak as they are, as we have them at this point. So it is a capitalist system is, in essence, a very undemocratic system. And the reason that Alex Gary has become so such a beloved program, I'm replaying it about every year and a half, and I should probably do it even more often, because every time I play a reading from his manuscript, I'm getting floods of calls from people and huge numbers of downloads from my website, because the way Alex Carey was introduced to me was actually by Helen Caldicott, the great Australian physician and anti-nuclear weapon campaigner, who is still going strong, who I will feature in my next program, actually.
Oh, wonderful, wonderful.
And
they both, from Australia.
Huh?
They're both Australians.
She is in Australia.
No, she and Alex Carey are both native Australians.
Yes, yes. So she had actually met him shortly before his death and brought his manuscript to the United States. That was before he had been published in any way. When I did my research on him, I only found articles and went from publisher to try and interest them in publishing it, and was really glad that eventually, after I had given up, some university press did make a compilation and published it as under the title, Taking the Risk Out of Democracy. But Helen Caldicott, in her wonderful Chuck's way, said at one of her talks, in sort of a side remark, and you need to, and by the way, do you know why you're all so stupid? And you should have seen the audience of all these good lefties. I was sitting in the back recording, and they all sort of crunched down in their seats and looked over their shoulder, who is she talking about? And then she realized she had offended like a whole audience of 700 people. She said, oh, no, it's not your fault. It's not your fault that you're stupid. You are actually the victims of a 70-year, and by now it's 15, 20 years more, so let's say of a 90-year effort of corporate propaganda to not make you clear about your interests, to deceive you about the nature of the economic system, to hide the iron hand of state power from you. All this was carefully done. It was expensive, and it had its setbacks, but it's a rolling propaganda machine that started in World War II and has never really stopped. It's now ending up in Fox News and major media.
It floods the airwaves. It floods the major publications. Oh, I think listeners to this program know that pretty well. The people who don't know about programs like this and yours, Mariah, and who think that they get real news from their morning paper, maybe in a small town they do. They certainly don't in a big city. The New York Times has been a corporate mouthpiece since it was founded in the middle of the 19th century. So, I mean, you can just imagine how much worse it's gotten over the years. And I mean, it's just outrageous. I like to do a little bit of media critique every now and then. And my two favorite targets are the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal. The Journal mostly on its op-ed page, and one writer in particular, who I'm sure knows me by now. I have to clean up after the mess that she makes every now and then by absolutely telling the opposite of the truth. And the New York Times, because they're so important, that there's no publication that has a broader reach or has more impact in what they report than the Times. And of course, the TV broadcasters pick up the big stuff that they print. So if they go one way, the others are going to follow. As for Fox, well, it doesn't get any worse than that. people who actually think that Fox is a news operation. But, of course, the same is true for all the rest of them, Mariah. I mean, they're all pretty abysmal.
Yes, yes. Well, you know, a really wonderful antidote to propaganda is real information. And outlets like what you're working on and Michelle Shostakovich's work, that all puts out real traceable information. It's just not always getting the distribution it deserves. But, you know, I don't know how soon the break is coming.
Okay, I'll keep going. The music will tell us.
Okay. Well, what I wanted to also mention briefly is that I will go back again to the issue of nuclear power because it is so important and it's so tragically having a renaissance, although that's a wonderful word used for a terrible cause. There's a revival of nuclear power, and it's pretty much worldwide. And even Obama says that that is one of the options for climate change. And there are like three really basic pieces of disinformation in there that anybody can understand very easily. And I'm working on getting those out again. That's why I'm presenting Helen Caldicott again, my little mini-series against nuclear power will begin with a talk I recorded that she gave at Children's Hospital in Oakland. And the talk was already a year and a half ago, but it was the most amazing. I had never seen that side of Helen Caldicott. And that's not yet on my website, so you have to come back when it's posted, and I may need to have to travel into town if our satellite connection here in the mountains doesn't come back to upload it. So come back to tucradio.org to find that under newest programs.
Mariah, there's no question that I reviewed one of Helen's books. I think she has a newer one out from the one I reviewed a couple of years ago, and I think the title of the one I reviewed was Nuclear Power is Not the Answer.
That's it, yes.
Oh, it was a wonderful book. I was a little concerned that it was a bit technical, and I wanted to explain it in plain English. And I did something I never did before in reviewing a book. I sent her my review before I got it published, and I was very lucky. I only made a couple of small mistakes, and she corrected me, and I fixed them. Technical stuff, not evaluating how good or bad a job she did, but just technical mistakes I made, and they were small, and I fixed them. And she makes it very clear that if there ever was a technology from hell, nuclear power is it, and it absolutely is a huge polluter. And it absolutely contributes to climate change, and all this rubbish that it's a clean source of power is just an outrageous lie. Plus the fact that it's so dangerous, and sooner or later we're guaranteed that there will be a massive problem. I'm very worried about that, Mariah, because I live in a city that's surrounded by about a dozen of these plants, you know, over 100 or so mile radius. A circumference.
Yes.
If one of those plants ever goes down and I'm downwind of it, Chicago could become uninhabitable.
Yes.
Literally.
Yes, I know. Yes,
so what you're
right about the technical stuff. It's something actually I was struggling a little bit in editing because the talk she gave there was totally technical. It was before doctors and nurses. It was at 8 a.m. It was called a grand round when a hospital staff invites a fellow physician to talk on a technical issue. And I'm putting it out anyway because it is a really good reference point for all the different forms of radiation that are inherent in the nuclear food chain.
Oh, food chain is right.
What a strange mistake to make. And the nuclear production chain from the uranium mining and the effects on the environment and the workers. And she names all the different forms of isotopes that you discovered when you were reading your book. That she lists there as well. And I think it's real important to know that not only do all these different forms of radiation exist, then, you know, in the processing in order to make the fuel for the reactors, then in the decaying radiation off the fuel rods in reactors, then the storage of these fuel rods in these ponds, cooling ponds, then the total lack of permanent storage, the total inability to reprocess, which reprocessing as it is done at this point is a really dangerous and yet another terribly polluting process. So there is no recycling going on of that material.
There's no way to deal with this technology, Mariah, as you know and I learned. I mean, this technology is so vile that it's like an Andromeda strain. I mean, this thing could literally go out of control and cause an unbelievable problem. And then they want to store the waste in this country in Yucca Mountain, very close to a known earthquake fault.
Right.
And, of course, they want to store it
wrong.
For thousands of years.
Yeah.
And they'll put it in barrels or something, and eventually it's going to leak. It's going to get into the water supply. And if there's ever a bad earthquake, heaven help the people who live in Nevada, parts of California, and I don't know what else.
Yes.
These are the people who govern us. Oh, we have to take another break, and then we have a short segment left, and darn it, the program will be over. We'll take a break, Mariah, and be right back.
Okay, see you.
Back to the News Hour. I'm on with Mariah Gallatin. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left, Mariah. What else are you currently working on or have you recently completed on TUC that is important for listeners to know about?
Thank you for asking. I am doing this nuclear mini-series in preparation of a program on solar thermal. And that is, in many people's opinion, a really, really good way of producing electricity. It is a technology that exists for about 150 years. There are examples of solar thermal where you rig up in areas with a lot of sunshine, like Arizona, New Mexico, etc., where you rig up a device where you reflect the heat from the sun onto tubes or vessels and create steam. There was actually a working solar thermal pumping station in Egypt in 1906 that was built by an American company. So there's no doubt that the technology works. And there are many solar thermal stations in Europe where Spain has some of the conditions. North Africa would even be better, some of the conditions of intense sunlight. And if you just sum it up, for the cost of the Iraq War, we could have built solar thermal installations that would provide all electricity for the whole U.S. grid. And that seemed to me like maybe an overstatement. So I got to do an interview with a wonderful elder. His name is Fred Morse. He was President Carter's advisor on alternative energy. And he was actually partly responsible for putting the solar hot water heaters onto the White House that Reagan immediately removed. And they were during the Carter administration very close to initiating projects like this. But of course, you know, given the oil companies' powers, the energy company corporations are vastly underestimated in their power. In Europe, that has become pretty clear because governments have gone toe-to-toe with them in providing opportunities for alternative energy. Here, the fight hasn't really begun yet. But they are a formidable enemy as well, and they have prevented this from coming up. And there's something small and overlooked. Those are investment tax credits for alternative energy that have been reluctantly renewed or left hanging by Congress, and that should be extended for several years because building solar thermal installations, is a multi-year project. It's It's not taking as long as building a nuclear power plant. That's 15 years. But it takes about 5 to 6 years to build a really huge solar thermal plant. And that is, and when I interviewed Fred Morris, I thought of asking him this, you know, kind of crazy question. Would this be enough to provide all electric? And he said, well, yes. But there isn't apparently the political will to do it. So solar thermal would be a way to keep the nuclear reactor in the sky, the sun, at a safe distance, and utilize its wonderful heating power and give us electric power.
Mariah,
especially if we're willing to cut back a little. We're using too much of that.
There are so many wonderful things we could do to benefit the society and everybody living here, but we don't do it. The hour is over, I'm sad to say. I am so grateful for you coming on. It was a wonderful hour, much too short.